You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Thursday, 26 September. U.S. consumer spending is due later today. Previous 1.5, expected 2.9%. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, chatting with Carmen Mapuwani, independent analyst. JSC REITs, they've had a strong run over the last year, a very strong run. Is there still value here? Does she have a preferred in this space? Chatting with Warren Wheatley, he's the CEO of Altvest Capital. They're doing a JSC IPO. And then, of course, they've got their underlying preference share options as well. And then Tian Pan, he's our head of strategy and product from Prescient China. There was that huge Chinese stimulus deal announced Tuesday. What's different this time, and does it make China more investable? This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb, Discovery remuneration for its top five, tops 205 million. CEO Adrian Gore got more than 30 million. Two others got even more. Business Day, asset manager flags lackluster foreign interest in SA assets. Old Mutual Investment Group said investors need to see state-owned enterprises doing better. Morning markets, the U.S. was mixed. S&P down 0.2%, NASDAQ up 0.2%. Over in the east, it's green. Sydney 0.5% higher, Tokyo 2.4%, Hong Kong 1.9%, and Tencent 2.9% in the green. Commodities mostly red. Gold off $1, $2,685. Brent 73.56. Platinum 1,008. And palladium 1,052. Rand is 17.21. Bitcoin 63,300. And top 40 opening call, looking for a green open, 260 points or a third of a percent higher.
MoneyWeb Now. On the Money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Carmen Mapuwani. Carmen, appreciate the early morning. As I said in the intro there, the REITs, the property sector, after a long time of going nowhere, or truthfully at times actually going badly south if we go back as far as 2018, it's had a really strong run since October of last year. What's driving it? Is there still value here? And is there a preferred stock or stocks that you have in the space?
Yeah, I think the important thing definitely is to remember that we're coming off very soft base, right? They've really struggled, through COVID, et cetera. So we've discussed this before, where do we look? Which portfolio is the preferred one, et cetera? And it seems like there's been a tailwind, definitely sentiment changing, I think, for one, in terms of the expectation of interest rates declining. Yeah. Which we have now seen starting 2 weeks ago or a week ago. And then definitely the GNU, they've got a significant boost from that. So surprisingly, the best performing sector year to date, number one. I don't think a lot of people would have expected that. But again, definitely off a soft base, which I always will caution about because, those percentages look very, very enticing. But it obviously depends on what your appetite is on in terms of the risk level.
Yeah, I take your point on that. And it is, is it as simple as the lower sort of government yields, et cetera, makes REITs more attractive because of the yield that we see? And that's one of those tailwinds which has helped.
No, definitely. It's quite nuanced, obviously, as we can expect. So when you ask about preferred one, very, very hard for me to choose. You've got to look at which industry sort of the portfolio is geared towards, where the location is. More importantly, what the debt structure looks like, because that's obviously a key point for these rates as well. So as you've mentioned, you're looking at what the other possibilities are in terms of investments. Mm-hmm. On this side, yes, you do get the income from there, but it seems that a lot of the executive committees or management bodies are looking to try to keep a bit of that capital. Previously, at least up to 90% was distributed, but seems to be more prudent now, retaining a bit more capital, dividends slightly down, or income distribution slightly down. So all those nuances need to be taken into account. as I said, you know, what is our overall view about property at this point?
And you made a good point there. I mean, I remember, and again, if we go back to when it peaked in late 2017, 2018, the loan to values were north of 50%. They now, I mean, it depends which one we look at. Some are on the sort of low 40s, some in the mid 30s. But debt levels are way better than they were 6, 7 years ago.
Absolutely. I think, you know, if you haven't learned your lesson, then that is one key problem. But it seems that they have a lot more cautious. I think at this point, in terms of looking at the interest rate cycle and the obvious tailwind of GNU, we're going to have to see what actually comes from the performance of the GNU. But having said that, let's say it's to the positive. The question is, does it boost the consumer side of property? So, you know, consumer confidence goes up. Or is it more focused on the industrial side? There have been comments that the commercial and office space is looking better, but again, off a very, very weak base.
Yeah, looking better, but as you say, off a very, very weak base. And we've still got fairly big vacancies, and in many cases, most cases, are negative rent reversions. We'll leave it there. Kamal Mapuwani, independent analyst, always appreciate the early morning time. The Standard Flexible Income Fund delivers capital preservation and consistent top quartile inflation-beating returns. Let your money keep working with Standard Asset Management even after you retire.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
I'm chatting now with Warren Wheatley. He's CEO of Altvest Capital. They are currently doing an IPO via Easy Equities to list on the JSE. Warren, appreciate the early morning time. Altvest Capital, the idea as I see it is really around broadening access to financial products. And in some cases, financial products that were sort of more readily available, I suppose, to the average investor. I'm thinking retirement products and the like. But also sort of the unavailable, investing into you know, the restaurant in Mulville and the like. It's about broadening access.
Yeah, it is about broadening access and access to alternative asset classes that are otherwise unavailable. You know, restaurants, game lodges, that kind of stuff. But also, you know, we've got a private credit fund that's equally appetizing.
The IPO that's then coming, I mean, as I understand, you're going to be listing Altvest Capital. You're currently listed on the Cape Town Stock Exchange, moving that listing across to the JSE. And you mentioned Game Lodge, you mentioned the restaurant in Melville. These will also be listing, but listing as separate entities.
As separate instruments. So all of these are instruments issued off Altvest's balance sheet. As hybrid financial instruments in terms of the JSE definitions. That means they've got characteristics of both debt and equity.
Let's dig into that, because I think the Altvest Capital, we understand well. These you said that the sort of characteristics of debt and equity, they're not sort of the traditional share I would be buying, but they certainly do give me, I suppose, rights to future profits if the businesses do well.
What they actually give you is see-through rights, the same as the ordinary shareholders enjoy, save for voting.
Okay, so I would share in. So no voting, no AGMs. But this really would be a situation where, you know, as you say, if profits are doing well and they're making money, they're paying dividends, I would then receive a share pro rata of those dividends.
Yeah, correct. So Altvest acts as a conduit, you know, the same way a family trust works. Anything we get, we pass on directly to the underlying subscribers of those instruments.
Do they, in terms of listing requirements, I mean, do they get full sort of, get full financials and the like to see how they're doing, what the growth prospects are? I imagine these are in many cases really around growth, and this was a capital raise for future growth.
Yeah, so The financial reporting is a bit complex. We're going to voluntarily do as much as we can. But again, we are dealing with SMEs who aren't as sophisticated, and that's one of the reasons they're using us. You know, so it's a tricky nuance in that we're trying to solve quite a complex problem. And so there are certain trade-offs, one of those being, for example, okay,
And this is a key point. These are small. These are SMEs. This is not a top 40 stock. This is the one, for example, Bambina is a child-friendly restaurant in Melville. And they've gone this route, in essence, to raise capital, expand, and I imagine open new restaurants around Gauteng and potentially the country as well.
Yeah. And, you know, so Bambanani, as an example, couldn't raise money from any other source. Her bank manager wouldn't even take her call. You know, it's near impossible for a restaurant in Melville to raise any form of capital. We were able to raise, in the first round, 12.5 million.
Mm-hmm.
And we're well on our way to giving her almost 5 million this time round. You know, so it's near impossible for businesses like that. In return, what she's done with the capital, the first 12.5 at least, has created 80 jobs.
Mm-hmm.
The second bit of capital she's going to use to build out a children's theater in Melville,
mm-hmm.
and bring back drama and theater to Melville and Johannesburg at large. So, you know, it's SMEs who are doing wonderful things, who need capital and can't get it anywhere else.
Yeah, and to your point there around the 80 jobs, SMEs are where jobs are created. They're not created by governments, and the big top 40s create only a little bit. A final question, are they sort of open-ended? What I'm trying to understand, I mean, if I've invested in this particular one, is there a end date, or does this continue sort of indefinite until, you know, like any other company, it either progresses to perhaps a main board listing or the like?
Well, we hope one day that there will be an alternative exchange that can accept these smaller companies,
mm-hmm.
perhaps the CTSE at some point in time. The idea, we've created a permanent capital vehicle.
Okay.
And why we've listed the instruments is that investors can, of course, exit whenever they want to, without the pressure of us having to sell at what could be an inopportune time.
Yeah, get you. And yeah, you don't want to, I mean, being a full seller is never a great idea. We'll leave it there. The IPO is currently open on Easy Equities, runs until 1st of October. There was Warren Wheatley, CEO at Altvest. Appreciate the early morning time. And that's our question today on LinkedIn and Twitter. Are you taking part in the listing? Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. Let your money benefit from experience with StanLib Asset Management. Find out about StanLib Global Select Fund, which follows an investment discipline that has delivered results for 3 decades.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
I'm chatting with Tien Pan. He's head of strategy and product at Prescient China. Tien, appreciate the time. We had a fairly big announcement out of China Tuesday morning. Of course, we were closed for public holiday. Stimulus measures, can they lift the overall investor and consumer sentiment in China? We have seen previous attempts, although perhaps not as big, that haven't really done much. Is this enough from the Chinese authorities in your sense?
Awesome. I think it's certainly the biggest sort of combined efforts of stimulus that we've seen, at least since the market peak back in 2021. So it does have the highest probability of success in our view. It's certainly probably the first step in a series of stimulus policies that we expect to come through. So it was very much central bank and monetary side that's widely expected, this fiscal side, to try and lift up demand and confidence in the Chinese market.
Okay, so because that could be my next point. Do they have more ammunition? You're saying patently they do. Does it change the view? I mean, the Chinese market's been down for, 3-4 years? It's been under pressure. Yeah. Does this make it a better investable destination? Certainly, I know a lot of China bulls who've been talking around the likes of JD.com, Alibaba, Tencent, and saying, you know, the valuations here are just ridiculously cheap.
Yeah, absolutely. We believe China is an absolute screaming buy. Yes, it has been extremely painful for the past 3.5 years, a lot of sort of earnings compression, a massive decline in earnings, like in those names that you have mentioned, Tencent, Alibaba. Mm-hmm. Although we have seen earnings starting to come back this year with a series of tech earnings announcements earlier last month or two, and with earnings multiples at pretty much all-time lows. It's just a screaming buy. We believe a lot of opportunities. With the Fed rate cutting cycle starting, we expect to see funds flow out of US dollars, and part of those global portfolio flows will eventually or inevitably flow into China, and that would help lift markets here along with domestic investors. The fundamentals are just great. The value is just absolutely amazing. And the companies are what they were 4 or 5 years ago when they were everybody's favorite. But right now, it's just not everybody's favorite. And we believe it's a massive opportunity.
And part of it, you mentioned 4 or 5 years ago, we saw Xi Jinping, the crackdown on a number of sectors, tech most notably, his talk around common prosperity. That does seem, my sense as a complete outsider and novice here, is that Xi Jinping largely achieved what he was looking to do, and we're unlikely to see more crackdowns coming. Is that a fair assessment?
Yes, we certainly believe that, and we've been also told that, at least verbally on the ground here. We did see a string of policies come through several years ago. While the intentions were good, everything came together too quickly and altogether in terms of negative sentiment hits for the market. Investors got scared. Consumers got scared. I mean, investors with capital got scared, and that sort of hit confidence really badly. Since probably late 2022 to last year, we haven't heard anything in terms of regulations. Earlier this year, we saw an official state press release, state regulator press release, to say the investigation or into Alibaba subsidiary and financial group, etc. So linked to the sort of tech crackdown that you mentioned earlier, all of these have come to an end. There's no official mention of it anymore. The word on the ground is that regulators and governments are really trying to promote business confidence. We saw earlier this year, or late last year, late December last year, draft gaming regulations come out for public comment that really hit the Chinese tech sector over a single trading day late in December. The official that was responsible for publishing those draft regulations was quietly sacked several days later. It wasn't highly publicized. So it's sort of the way the government does things here, and it's a clear sign that they are not going to touch sort of market confidence and market crackdown related things for the foreseeable future, in our view.
I remember that, and the regulations were quietly withdrawn at the same time. Last question. Yes. We've got geopolitical tension between the US and China. This started under Donald Trump's first term, but has continued under President Biden. Is this a significant risk? Is it a risk post the election? Or is this just something which I suppose both sides, both economies, both the US and China, are kind of learning to live with?
Absolutely. So, I mean, our base case assumption is that geopolitical tensions between China and the United States will remain there, whoever wins the upcoming elections in the U.S. later this year. So it has been bad, like you said, since 2018, when President Trump started the first round of tariffs in the trade war. There's been a slew of tech sanctions and additional tariffs. Last we checked, actually, as of late last month, there were 1,474 Chinese companies slash entities being sanctioned by the U.S. So it's a massive list, and we don't expect that to get better. But realities or practicalities on the ground is that the two sides are learning to live with one another under sort of the tense relations. Recently, we saw sort of military communication links open up again. So more communication is better in our view, just to control the downside. But we don't have any sort of illusions, if I can say, that bilateral relations between China and the U.S. will get better under whoever wins for the next U.S. administration.
And the reality is that some of these sanctions on China, and I'm thinking particularly around chips, around technology, I'm thinking around the mobile phones, China gets around them by then creating their own tech, which is as good, if not better.
Yeah, so they've certainly gotten around a lot of the sanctions. So in terms of cutting-edge technology, as far as we understand, China's still several years, arguably 3 to 5 years behind. But I think what's good for China or on China's side is that the majority of the market does not need the absolute cutting-edge chip technology. So, for example, not everyone on the street needs the latest iPhone 16 Pro. People are quite happy with the iPhone 16. And those are the levels of processes that China, especially Huawei, which is probably the most sanctioned tech company by the U.S. in the world, are able to produce. Huawei not only producing mobile chips that are part of the most advanced group in the world, they are starting to produce sort of AI chips that are starting to challenge NVIDIA within the Chinese market. Not as good as the most cutting-edge chips, but as good as sort of the next second, third rank type of capabilities. So we do expect Chinese capabilities to continue to get better. The whole tech self-sufficiency drive is driving a lot of investment, both from state and private sectors in China. And that's why we have seen sort of really fast advancements in the sector. A lot of wasted capital, a lot of losses in the sector too. But in terms of practical technological advancements, massive leaps forward in the last 3 years or so, or at least since 2019 when Huawei really started to get sanctioned.
Yeah, and I take your point. I'm on an iPhone 14. It does perfectly well. We'll leave it there. Tien Pan, he's head of strategy, product at Prescient China. Appreciate the time. That's it for today. We're chatting with Sebastian Mullins yesterday from Schroders about the recession fears that have all but disappeared. And if you remember the beginning of last year, that was all we were talking about. Are you worried about a global recession in the near term? That's what we asked. Almost half of you said, yep, the risks are real. Third said, maybe, but it'll be shallow. The rest of you were saying, nap, all is good. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Norbochle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. Credit markets.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.